Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
So today we are discussing The Space Merchants by Frederick Pohl and Cyril M. Kornbluth, published in 1952. Barry, would you do the honors, please?
From the back cover, it reads, "In a vastly overpopulated near-future world, businesses have taken the place of governments and now hold all political power. States exist merely to ensure the survival of huge transnational corporations. Advertising has become hugely aggressive and boasts some of the world's most powerful executives. Through advertising, the public is constantly deluded into thinking all the products on the market improve the quality of life." Isn't that always true?
Yes.
However, the most basic elements are incredibly scarce, including water and fuel. The planet Venus has been visited and judged fit for human settlement. Despite its inhospitable surface and climate, colonists have had to endure a harsh climate for many generations until the planet could be terraformed. Mitch Courtenay is a star-class copywriter in the Fowler Schocken Advertising Agency and has been assigned the ad campaign that would attract colonists to Venus. But a lot more is happening than he knows about. Mitch is soon thrown into a world of danger, mystery, and intrigue where the people in his life are never quite what they seem, and his loyalties and core beliefs will be put to the test.
All right. So, what did everybody think? Kevin?
It was amusing.
Deep.
I really enjoyed the book, and it kind of reminded me a bit, you know, like sort of like an early version, a little bit of Infomocracy, like, sure, which we reviewed in an earlier podcast.
So, well, yes, 1952 as the publishing date.
Right, yeah. We said that earlier. Today, Random Facts Man shall be played by Kevin.
It had words.
Yes.
I play it every time.
It also had words then, too.
He's not playing. Anyway, yes, what about Infomocracy?
It just kind of reminded me a little bit of it. You know, it's sort of a different side of it. You know, this is the advertising. It's all about the brand, mm-hmm, which Infomocracy was more about. I mean, it was about the brand, but it was also, you know, elections of the government. So maybe it's sort of the flip side of the same coin almost.
Yeah. This was the second time that I'd read this. I got a lot more out of it this time because the first time was kind of just a quick skim I did a long time ago. And I thought it was remarkably prescient. I had a little bit of look at the historical context. And this was, of course, the era of big cigarettes. One of the characters that's referenced, George Washington Hill, was the guy who came up with Lucky Strikes. And if you ever listen to old Jack Benny programs, they'll turn LSMFT into sort of weird poetry. Oh, yeah, Lucky Strikes means fine tobacco. Sorry, that was a... Barry just gave me a "you just grew a second head" look.
I only smoke Star brand cigarettes.
Exactly. Brand loyalty. It's hard to say whether this was prescient or just the world hasn't changed as much as we think it has.
Probably.
I think it hasn't changed as much as we think it has. I think we're just more effective at displaying or presenting brand information these days with...
Right, exactly.
Yeah, like we pretend it's more subtle anyway.
Right, but it's just like, oh yes, this particular product is completely addictive and it'll cost you more to get rid of the addiction than it would to just stay addicted to it for your whole life. So go ahead.
Keep vaping, kids.
Yeah, why would you want to stop?
Exactly. It's so helpful and good for you.
Well, as they talk about later, where it's like, you know, oh, well, you know, it's all design. You know, you have your spray of this, whatever it is, and that makes you think of, you know, smoking this, and that makes you think of eating this, and, oh, that, right, and that makes you think of the first thing, and you go in a loop over and over and over.
And it's easy to get caught in a loop these days. It's not necessarily all brand products, but it's usually sort of, oh, then I'm going to go to this website, and then I'm going to go to this website. Oh, yes, and I forgot to mention that this podcast is sponsored by Coffeeist.
Coffeeist.
Actually, Coffeeist is now a trademark, or at least a brand name of Soylent, which is slurry.
It's an engineered food.
Engineered food combined with coffee. I tried it for about a week. There were some unpleasant side effects, and I stopped doing it. So...
I'm also to blame for getting Steven to try it. I've been consuming it for a while now, and I've had some ill effects, but nothing that's made me stop.
I have not tried it, and I am legally disassociating myself from both of you.
That's not true. I saw you drink one.
Well, no. I've tried Soylent. I've not tried Coffeeist. Oh. Soylent is pleasingly bland and
pleasantly neutral.
Well, seasonally bland, says Kevin.
See, we should come up with more ads for them.
All right.
And
well,
I did pick this book based on the fact that this is where coffee, the name coffeeist comes from.
Right. Exactly.
Did they admit to that, or did someone just found out?
They're certainly not trying to hide it.
Right.
I mean, it's a lot like Soylent, right? It's based on something from the, I'm assuming it was a book before it was a movie, and
It was a book called Make Room, or Make Room, Make Room, Make Room. I can't remember.
Maybe we'll have to go read
that. Actually, I think you overshot. It was Make Room, Make Room.
Okay. I know it was a couple times I thought, but I wasn't totally sure.
And back to the book.
All right. So we're going to, since we've all given our deeply held opinions, including Kevin, who I believe once again said it was there.
It was better than there. I did enjoy it, and it did have that kind of early, you know, the early last century sci-fi feel to it, you know, sort of a, you know, hey, it feels like it's, you know, in the 50s and...
Well, I still think it held up remarkably well for the time.
It did. I mean, it's not a detriment. It sort of had this particular feel to it. But yeah, I liked it.
Okay, cool. All right, so we shall return in a moment with more sci-fi, sci-fi, sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
Spoilers.
So welcome back to our spoiler section, and we shall begin, as usual, with our usual questions. First question, was there tea in this book? I don't think there was any. It was all coffeeist.
Yes, it was all coffee.
There were other brands, but I don't think there was any teaist or anything.
I think the natural resources of tea have failed us.
That's true. Next, is there an awkward sex scene? This was the 1950s, so the most that we had was a woman that kills herself for love.
That is true.
Let's see. Is there a catchphrase? There were tremendous numbers of catchphrases, but they weren't used in a particularly irritating way. They were used to elucidate the ad agency itself.
That pretty much covers it.
Okay. So let me just run through the plot briefly. So this is a kind of a twisty one because a lot happens to the main character. So Mitch Courtenay is this elite star class copywriter. Star class is their sort of top of the top type of guy. Lives a life of comfort and privilege. As an advertising man, he exists by getting the lower class, which he calls consumers, physically or psychologically addicted to these products that he pushes. Then he gets the challenge of a lifetime. Convince people to colonize the inhospitable planet Venus. Then, after a fight with a business rival, he finds that his identity has been altered. He's now George Groby, a low-level worker bound for a job swabbing vats in Costa Rica. Using his advertising skills, he manages to rise up in the ranks of the Kanzis, a countercultural combination, there's a tongue twister, of the ecological and labor movements, kind of a greenish-red, ba-dum-bump. After getting assigned back to New York, he manages to get his old job back, only to discover that his wife has been the Kanzi agent responsible for shipping him off to Costa Rica. After reconciling with Kathy, because I think all the wives in science fiction novels had to be named Kathy at that point, Mitch winds up in charge of both Fowler Schocken and the Kanzi movement, but his dual life is discovered by a witch-hunting congress. He winds up escaping to Venus with his wife and settling there happily. And they all lived happily ever after.
Drink more coffeeist.
So I think one of the strongest parts of the book was when they were kind of lampooning the advertising practices of the day. Because at that point, it was probably just starting to be understood how addictive a lot of basic things were. You know, cigarettes, coffee. It sort of put in stark contrast things that we do kind of take for granted, the fact that we do push people to take addictive substances.
Such as?
Well, coffee.
What's wrong with that?
I don't understand.
Obviously, I've been revealed as a Kanzi spy.
Get him. Your star class will be revoked.
We'll just tattoo some extra digits on your identification number.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Like at one point, his secretary, I guess when he's sent down and everyone thinks he's dead, you know, and then she started working at the local club or something like that in the building for the
Right. Was it kind of implied that she was a prostitute now?
It seemed to be that there was something in that vein, but
it was left unsaid. Yeah. It was said.
Yeah. She was basically like, I can't go back to be a consumer. I just can't, you know.
Then he was saying, oh, well, he knew how he'd handle this problem. He would get an exclusive contract with her, you know, once it was convenient for him.
And, oh, right. And then you find out that she was in love with him, and then wasn't that, I forget exactly what happened. She was the one who jumped or something. I forget if that was a cover-up.
Basically, his business rival jumped out of the building, supposedly, but that was actually...
Oh, right. That was a cover-up.
That was a fake death, because practically almost as many people fake died in here as in your average issue of Marvel Comics.
That's true. A lot of them.
If you didn't see the body, they didn't actually die, right?
Right. And if you didn't actually see them actually plummet all the way, then they didn't die. And even then, if it would cost a certain amount of money for them to stay dead, then they're not going to stay dead.
Right.
But, of course, this is a 1953 novel, which means that with the best will in the world, there's going to be some issues with how they treat women. For example, his secretary, she was functioning as his food taster, or claiming that.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah.
And then when they were on the run, and then she dies apparently poisoned. Apparently, that was actually just a suicide because she loved him so much and she couldn't have him. So she wanted to prove her love by killing herself.
Oh, I actually, okay.
That was my guess of it. There's a lot of unsaid.
I just took it on face value that she was doing the food tasting and it was poisoned or something.
Yeah, I thought that she had been sneaking one of his rations of coffeeist or something and it happened to be poisoned.
Right, but then there was then who poisoned them, because nobody knew where they were then.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And what I just said never gets, like, set down in words, but it's just like, well, she did love you a lot, and there was nobody actually trying to poison you right then.
At least she didn't throw herself off the boat.
Throw herself off the boat? Oh, God.
Planet yes. Adventure.
Thank you, Mr. Vance.
My mind completely blanked. That would have been a better end for her, though. She's like, so you don't love me? Suddenly she pulls out a sword from nowhere. One thing that I thought kind of weakened the overall impression a little bit is, okay, so part of this is supposed to be, well, the lower class, they're just like us. They're not so bad. Obviously, this should be a meritocracy, but, you know, once Mitch Courtenay winds himself down there, he's able to pull himself back up by his bootstraps, no problem.
Well, he actually doesn't, right? He needs a significant amount of help from the consies.
True.
Those damn, what is it, conservationists or something? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I thought that the consies were handled sort of interestingly, because it was a little bit of a view into Cold War politics.
Right. Plus, like, the combination terrorist cell that they treated them like in the media. But then when they went through the mechanics where it's like, well, only one other person, you know, has my contact information. And, you know,
right.
When he got recruited by the guy, it was like that sheet of paper, like, you know, you hold my hand in your life. And then the funniest thing was he's reading through it and is talking about how, you know, we're not crazy, you know, we just believe that you shouldn't destroy the earth and so forth. And he's like, this ad copy is horrible. He's like, you know, trying to appeal on intellectual level never works. You have to go for emotion and all this stuff. He's like, I could write, you know, better copy in my sleep.
All right. What else did we want to talk about?
Chicken Little.
Ah, yes.
They met inside of Chicken Little.
Underneath.
Which is the organism, I guess, that is the new protein of the future.
Super chicky knob.
It's like a chicky knob that's the size of a room or something. And I guess they push algae nutrients down a chute and it lands on Chicken Little and Chicken Little consumes it. But they have some sort of device that allows them to kind of burrow through Chicken Little.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like Chicken Little was a giant, like, mutated chicken heart or something.
Yeah.
Like the size of a room, and just kept growing and growing. And it was just some kind of like a muscle mass that would keep growing. They just, like, pump nutrients into it.
And remember to cut off the cancerous bits.
And right. The guy would, like, you know, go around with some kind of a sword and just cut off the fresh bits and, you know, throw it down to the other workers for processing. And
yeah, that was I remember hearing about that kind of thing going on in a lot of like early days science fiction. Like there was talk about Mrs. Hawkins, which was this in vitro chicken grown in a dish in a Heinlein story that was in Methuselah's Children. And though they weren't eating that one, that was just sort of a prototype case of long-lived, you know, something that would be immortal. I wonder if there were sort of early experiments that led people to believe that that's where all meat was going, or if this was more like a metaphor for what humans were like or something.
I think it's more like a metaphor for, you know, what the sort of chicken growing and or chicken producing farms were turning into at the time.
Well, yeah, like we still got them now.
Well, right. Yeah. But that was like, I assume that was sort of like an early, I mean, I don't know the exact dates, but in the 50s, that must have been when they were kind of a huge factory farm transition or something starting.
Right. And we've just basically made it better by, you know, knocking their beaks off so they can't peck each other.
Good job. So, but yeah, that was kind of terrifying. And also, it was sort of funny how they were, you know, you basically, when you're not a star class, you essentially have no rights. They were talking about, you know, oh, what kind of contract did you get? All the people that were like on their en route down to to go to the farms, how, you know, he says going through his head was this, you know, jingle that he had written about, like, you know, all the workers are working out in nature, you know, willingly doing this, like, you know, real men's work or something. I don't remember what it was, but, you know, something about how, you know, it's all idyllic sounding. But when it came down to it, it was basically like these, you know, slave farm conditions. And, you know, like he got, you know, he was in a quote, like B class contract, I think, which essentially was, well, you know, you get paid some minimal amount to pay off your essentially indentured servitude, right?
What is it? You end up $5 in debt for every $100 you spend or something.
Right. Every time you turn around, you need to pay $5 to do something. And so someone else, you know, hey, can I borrow $5? And so everyone's always giving out notes to other people. And
right. You need to pay for, you know, your each shower you wanted to take. And if you wanted soap with that, oh, that's extra.
Right. Oh, you wanted to go use the restroom. Well, you know, that's this much. And like,
and that's actually fairly realistic for certain kinds of working conditions. If you want to be able to live, you wind up in debt to the company that you're working for.
Right. And so they, you know, it's not like you kind of got a script and then you're always down by the time your next paycheck comes. And so you're more in debt than after when you first start. So, you know, you never get out of it basically.
I wonder if this is like the, you know, the company coal mining towns, you know, this is sort of like a reflection on that.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you can even apply it to our far more comfortable existences here. Theoretically, we should all be millionaires because we could save up all of this money. But in point of fact, if we want to actually eat around here or something like that, then it actually costs a significant amount of money.
Right. It's like, whoa.
Little us.
Well, you know, you live in California. You should, like you said, you should be rich. It's like, except for housing is this much, you know, it costs me this much just to get to work and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, at the end, you know, well, yeah, it's actually not that cheap to just live here.
Right. This is probably not a fair comparison, but it is something that can be made.
There is a parallel. But yeah, and also then when they went into the, you know, he was complaining, he's like, oh, you know, this is a mistake. Someone's like, you know, we all have our Social Security tattoos or whatever. And he's like, I have a low number, which means he's like star class, I guess, or some, you know, important person. He's like, someone's added another 40 digits, you know, to mine. And they're basically like, yeah, right. And they kind of say, you know, we're, was it, you say Costa Rica, you know, you know, Costa Rica makes this much. And you know how much they make from, you know, the Chicken Little farm? That much. He's like, you know, basically their entire GNP is our company and they'll do whatever we want. And if we want to make an example of you, you know, you'll end up in their cell for who knows how long.
I mean, and my understanding is always that the 1950s were a sort of more innocent age.
Right.
That this would have probably been more hard punching, that rather than, you know, wow, this guy is really telling it as, you know, as it is. It, you know, just sort of to me sounds like he's probably, you know, science fictionalizing things that just were definitely going on and still go on. Now, one of the authors, I recall, actually got a job inside advertising. At first, it was just to study it for something he was writing, then wound up actually sort of in it for a while.
He landed in an episode of Mad Men?
Pretty much. And I did think about Mad Men quite a bit when we were doing this. Another thing I thought of was we were talking about, so there's a subplot with the little person, or they get, as they say in the book, midget pilot of the Venus spacecraft.
Dinklage.
Yes, who I think all of us sort of imagined Peter Dinklage playing this role to an absolute T.
He's like, I am the world's smallest test pilot.
Peter Dinklage would have been absolutely perfect.
Well, considering that once he gets back, he basically acts like Tyrion the whole time.
Exactly. So. it was fantastic. Though, I mean, it really waxed lyrical about, oh, he had the perfect skin that so many midgets have. And I'm just like, really?
Yeah, that was pretty disturbing.
You know,
I think I blocked that out.
Exactly. How closely do you want to get to know this guy?
He wants to get to know you.
Was there anything else we wanted to talk about? Okay. Well, then we're going to make it a slightly shorter one today. And so we shall now bring this to a merciful close. This has been Sci-Fi.
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 Sci-Fi. Sci-Fi. Sci-Fi. Sci-Fi.